Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Christmas is drawing near, and it's time to reflect on the Christmas story, perhaps in a way you never have before. Let's go in depth with Pastor Steve Matinee Vanderwell, Second Reformed Church, and Pastor Jeff Shydock, First Christian Reformed Church, Pella. Where does the Christmas story come from, Pastor Jeff?
Well, it comes from the gospel accounts, primarily the gospel of Matthew and the gospel of Luke, two stories of the birth of Jesus, the birth of the Christ child, the good news of great joy that a Savior is born to us.
Those are wonderful words, aren't they? And those resonate with much of society, don't they? Those specific words.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that everybody is glad to hear, tidings of comfort and joy, and sing the carols and delight in a good story like that.
Interestingly, those words are from the angels in Luke's account to the shepherds, and we really believe that those words are quite similar to a royal birth announcement, that when Caesar or someone like that would have a child, words very similar to this good news of great joy to all people would be on the announcement. And so Luke is, in a sense, undermining perhaps, mocking perhaps those royal announcements to say, look, here's this nobody Jewish guy in Bethlehem, and I'm using top-shelf language to describe his birth, royal language, really.
That is very interesting. I had no idea that there was that historical tradition. What else are they doing with that announcement?
Well, I think to the shepherds is again an interesting. Luke's account has the shepherds, and Matthew's account has the magi, wise men, kings, astronomers, astrologers, whatever we want to call them. But in the shepherds, I think we already see Luke painting with the colors that he's going to paint, that Luke's gospel is typically a gospel for the marginalized, the outcast, especially the economic downtrodden, and shepherds certainly would have been that if you had a little baby, inviting shepherds to come visit them wouldn't have been most people's first priority, that they lived on the edge of society, and yet this is who Luke has be the first to know.
Okay, so Luke and Matthew. Matthew is the other gospel that focuses on this event.
Yes, and they focus on the kingship of Jesus in different ways. As Steve said, with the announcement of a king being born, the account in Matthew is to the wise men who see the star, recognize the signs that a king is born, and come to inquire of this king. And, of course, Herod is upset that there's another king to be born, which leads down a whole trail of bloodshed and violence to try to save this child.
And so one story is for the masses, and one story is for the economic elite at the time?
Well, I don't know if I would necessarily go that way. Matthew is primarily targeting a Jewish audience, and so he's using prophecies and things like that would resonate with the Jews, especially those who know they're in an occupied land, the Romans controlling the land. Whereas Luke is writing to a Gentile audience and speaking of the disenfranchised. So he speaks of shepherds whose testimony wouldn't be admitted in court, according to some of the ancient documents. And so these were marginalized people, and they're the ones that the announcement comes to. So Luke is part of the turning the world on its head story, the last being first, the first being last.
And Matthew, as Jeff said, you'll hear this a lot, this took place to fulfill what was written, because writing to a Jewish audience, Matthew's trying to point out to them, look, all of the signals point to this. Yet then he still does kind of pull a little wry twist at the end when, again, these who finally comes, who sees the star, not the Jews, but the outsiders, the Gentiles, these magi. And again, I think is signaling where this is going. Here he comes, the king of the Jews, and the Jews are not going to recognize him. At the end, and right now at the beginning of this story, it's the outsiders one more time, but this time there are more ethnic outsiders being Gentiles.
And so the two Gospels are told from two different perspectives to two different audiences. Is that what you're telling me?
I think that's right. I think they have two different purposes in telling the story, and so they come at it from different angles.
And we in tradition have sort of nicely merged them together, which isn't all bad. It makes a nice Sunday school program or a Christmas special on television. But originally, there are these stories, and they share a lot in common, obviously, and they have different spins, different emphases, different audiences.
It's tough for Linus to tell two stories, isn't it, in the Christmas peanut special?
That's right, but of course, when he tells that story, it's marvelous. It's recounting the story right from the Gospel of Luke, and I think that story does resonate with people. As you said earlier, that's a story that people will listen to, will hold on to, and people long for that good news of great joy.
Now, is there mention of the nativity of the birth of Jesus in other Gospels?
Well, it's interesting. Mark doesn't have time for the birth of Jesus. He jumps right in with Jesus' baptism and acts as if anything that happens before then. Mark's in a hurry. Mark has kind of the short, succinct, I want to get to the cross is where Mark wants to focus. And so Mark has nothing about Jesus as a child, infant, or anything. And then John, being sort of the poet, mystic philosopher, tells the Christmas story not in a typical way that we would, you know, recognize it.
Yeah, it's more of the cosmic story, the Word who was God becoming flesh and dwelling among us. And it speaks of John as one who points to and tells of this one who is to come, but he's the Word made flesh who comes to dwell among us. So he doesn't have the details of mangers or wise men or shepherds or those sorts of things. He just says, this is the one, the Word who created the world now is taking on our human flesh and walking among us.
Any other mentions?
Well, there is John also in the book of Revelation, again, trying to communicate to a persecuted bunch of believers and giving them encouragement to stay strong, tells the nativity story in an odd way in Revelation 12, where he speaks of a woman with the stars for a crown, standing on top of the moon as a pedestal, a representation of Israel, giving birth to a child that is awaited, and there's a great dragon ready to devour this child, and it's painting the picture of the conflict of good and evil, and the child is the one who will bring that great victory. We see him later on riding a white horse and conquering the forces of evil. But in Revelation 12, he has a unique way of telling that story as this woman representing Israel and this great dragon trying to devour the promised child.
My goodness, I guess I missed that one in Sunday school.
Linus doesn't tell that story.
Although I would say both of the well-known Christmas stories also already are, again, pointing toward conflict and division. In Matthew, we have Herod and the slaughter of the innocents, where all these children under two are killed, that Herod is threatened because of a new king. And I think in Luke, it's maybe a little more muted, but we have the story very quickly of Jesus being brought to the temple as an eight-day-old for his sort of dedication. And an ancient prophet who lives in the temple tells Mary, you know, this child will bring about the rise and fall of many, and he will pierce your heart. So, again, both Matthew and Luke really, I think, are trying to convey really what they're going to say in the whole gospel already in the Christmas story. And you see, like I said, you see who their audience is, you see their emphases, and you see that this child is going to be the cause of division, conflict, bloodshed. Some are going to be very excited, and some are going to be very threatened and scared by the arrival of the child.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about the Christmas story with Pastor Steve Matinee Vanderwell and Pastor Jeff Shydock. Like all great stories, this one begins with a journey, Joseph and Mary. Could you tell us a little bit about that journey and why they were traveling?
Actually, only Luke has the journey, because Luke has Jesus, or Joseph, living up in Nazareth and having to be born. Jesus needs to be born in Bethlehem because he's of the house and lineage of David, and David's hometown was Bethlehem.
So everybody had to be born in their hometown of...
No, Jesus, to be the Messiah, has to be born in Bethlehem. That all Israel knew the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem because he would be a descendant of King David, and Bethlehem's David's town. So we have in Luke Joseph and Mary coming down from the north in order to be enrolled for this census to pay taxes. In Matthew, there is no journey. Joseph and Mary live in Bethlehem and later flee north as refugees to avoid King Herod. So there's a reverse journey that we don't, it doesn't make the Christmas cards very often.
And actually, I think Luke tells the physical journey from Nazareth down to Bethlehem. I think Matthew tells the spiritual journey of Joseph as he discovers that his betrothed, they're not married, they haven't had relations, and all of a sudden she's pregnant. And he doesn't know exactly what to do. Being a righteous Jew, he has the right to put her away, essentially the equivalent of a divorce, and say, she's done something that she shouldn't have done, and I don't want to have any part of it. And angels appear to him in dreams and say, no, this is something that God has planned. This is the work of the Holy Spirit, and you need to welcome Mary and the child who's to be born. You need to name him Jesus because he's going to save the people from their sins. And so Luke has the physical journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Matthew records a kind of a spiritual journey of Joseph in changing his mind from being the righteous one who would put her away to being the one who would welcome Mary and the child who's to be born.
During that time, that must have been a very difficult task.
I can't imagine what it would have been like to face that situation and then have angels appear in dreams and tell me what to do. I can't imagine putting myself in Joseph's shoes.
He's often a neglected figure, isn't he? Or am I just misunderstanding him?
I think Joseph often does get kind of short shrift, and Mary is where the focus is. And Luke primarily focuses on Mary and the angel visiting Mary, and then she responds with this beautiful poem we call the Magnificat, "Let it be to me according to your word." And Joseph, as Jeff was saying, in Matthew's account, is this righteous man who really does not do what the law would allow him, but instead is told by God to take Mary as his wife, and is, I think, kind of often the background figure, a supporting actor, but not a leading role, which is probably unfortunate in that I do think Joseph's role here of agreeing to this deal that in a way probably brought him some shame and some, some gossip and snickering behind his back, and, just soldiered on and was faithful when many would have said, this is a scandal I need no part of.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about the Christmas story with Pastor Steve Matinee Vanderwell and Pastor Jeff Shydock. And I bet sometimes you contemplate the nature of Mary as well. What do you see in your mind her being like?
Well, we would imagine that she was probably quite young. Some have suggested she was probably a teenager, a teenage girl, and yet incredibly humble. To have this angel appear and say, "Don't be afraid. You're going to be with child," and as Steve said, for her to respond with this beautiful prayer, this praise of God, and say, "Let it be to me as you have said," she's painted very admirably by Luke in his telling of that story, and a portrait of humble, willing service to God.
I would say, too, I guess words that come to my mind for Mary are tenacious, courageous, much more kind of vivid and three-dimensional than sort of the portrait of this kind of demure young woman in light blue that we see everywhere, that if you hear her words, if you see what she says, she had hot blood running in her veins and is not this sort of cardboard one-dimensional figure, but really seems to be excited and committed to what's going to happen.
And God also does provide some other places of encouragement. She goes to see her cousin Elizabeth, who is with child in another remarkable circumstance, and as Mary comes, the child in Elizabeth, her cousin's womb, leaps for joy, and that's, I think, an encouragement that God gives to her as she's going through this. I think that that tenacious willingness that she's not just your ordinary teenage girl that we're talking about. This is someone who's right there willing to take on the task that God's put before her.
And she did a pretty good job, didn't she?
Yeah, you know, once the birth happens, Mary continues to appear in the Gospels. Joseph disappears, which raises conjecture. The traditional answer is perhaps that he died at an early age, and we really don't know. But Mary continues to appear, throughout the whole gospel, and becomes really a follower of Jesus later in the gospels.
Thanks to Pastor Steve Matinee Vanderwell and Pastor Jeff Shydock for contributing to the program. Tomorrow on In Depth, we continue our discussion of the Christmas story. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to BobLeonard@KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in Marion County is KNIAKRLS.